Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun: Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I don't know who invited Caitlin.
It didn't stop you from humiliating her with a marker after she arrived.
Party 101. You pass out, you get chiefed. Happened to me plenty of times.
Except that Caitlin didn't pass out. She was whacked so hard over the head it killed her.
Are you sure you didn't tap that before you called in your pals? Wouldn't be the first time, right?
Look, a lot of people were upset about Caitlin making that list, not me.
You sure? Because under cons, it said that you fell asleep in record time afterwards.
And she also voted me biggest penis.
City, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. These are their stories.
Guys, welcome to Munch My Benson. My name is Adam. I am here in New York. It is very hot in my kitchen right now because my wife baked a cake for my son's birthday, which is tomorrow. I am joined on the line by Josh. How are things, Josh?
We're wishing VMP a happy birthday, second birthday. It's crazy that VMP's been around for 2 years and so's this dumb podcast.
He hasn't been around as long as the podcast has, though.
No. But not by much.
Not by much. He was a bun in the oven when we started this, that's for sure.
A glint in your eye.
More than a glint. He was a looming fear, a sword of Damocles over my head.
He was the disaster monster coming from the, about to emerge from the ocean.
Oh, yeah, big time. New York apartments, they're not vented properly, so there's no, hood that takes the heat of my dumb stove out of the house.
Yeah.
It just sits in the kitchen. So even though it's lovely outside, it's, murderously hot in this kitchen.
Well, vents didn't exist when your apartment building was built in, 1937.
It was built in, 1910, and they didn't have kitchens back then. Let's see. I watched the last three episodes of Barry over the last two nights, so.
Yeah, how about that finale?
It's pretty brutal, man. It's pretty rough.
Yeah.
Pretty rough stuff.
That whole sequence with NoHo Hank, where he's sitting in the dungeon, chained to the radiator. Listening to his friends getting torn apart by a panther. Watching that blood.
Very disturbing.
Come under the wall.
Yeah. Very disturbing.
Yeah. NoHo Hank is, of the people on the crime world side of Barry, he's definitely the most.
I would say in general, he's probably the most likable character the show.
Sure. Yeah.
Because
we forget about how horrible Sarah Gilbert, why can't I think of her fucking character's name?
Oh yeah, she's terrible. She's my she might be my least favorite character as far as the person I think is most awful.
She's fucking amazing at it.
Yes, of course. Yeah, no, she's brilliant, but she's awful, you know? And then Cousineau's awful too, even though, you know, he's also lovable and redeemed.
Yeah, I mean, he was at least trying to he's less objectionable. But though this season was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. You were a fucking monster when you were like an actor in Hollywood.
Exactly.
Every time he'd meet anyone this season was just like, oh, God. Just hanging his head in shame. When he meets the showrunner of that hot shit show.
Yeah.
And he's like, you threw a tea on me or whatever, like a hot tea on me when I was a PA.
During a Murder, She Wrote episode. Yeah. Extremely good shit.
But that NoHo Hank sequence from the dungeon to getting out and then walking down the hall, and you've got the guy dancing in silhouette, backlit in like that weird impressionistic way.
Totally insanity.
Wild. Yeah. So good.
Well, I read somebody, because I was looking to find out if a season four had already been booked.
I was looking at the same thing. Yeah.
But there was a pretty good piece on it, and they were making the point that each of the non-Barry principals by the end of the season kind of has become Barry. So I wonder if that's what the next season is going to be like. You know,
it's just like their cancer keeps spreading.
Yeah, they each kind of like tapped into their like demon killer side.
Sure.
So it's interesting. But it's a great show. Really liked it. Highly recommend it, even though we just threw out a shitload of spoilers, but
watch the
show from the beginning. If you were watching it already, you would have already seen this one. It's
By the time this fucking thing drops, it already aired like a month ago.
Mm-hmm. I think we should jump into this, Josh, because I have a lot to talk about for a very short slice of this episode.
I did some digging also.
Uh-huh.
We'll see if it was about the same thing.
I mean, I have a feeling it's about
I'd be shocked if we did the same thing, but it's possible.
I learned a new skill for this episode, so I'm going to throw that out there. But let's jump into it.
I want to say aloud what I hope that skill was, but I'm going to wait. I really want to say what my guess is, though.
Yeah, I mean, like...
Anyway, I'll say what it is after you say what your new skill is.
Okay.
So, we're looking at Season 12, Episode 10, Rescue. A gaggle of dipshits at an awful loft party are markering up a passed-out girl's face when the hostess stops them, only to discover that the human graffiti receptacle, Caitlin Lamarck, appears to have been sexually assaulted and has a massive gash on the back of her head. At Liv's, where she's playing house with Calvin, Lil' Cal first begs to come to work with her and then asks if she thinks his mom is dead. But Liv says she's doing everything she can to find his mom and dad, and they're probably still alive. He then busts out a picture he painted of her and says she rescued him. But a cut to work later, Elliot cautions her against getting too attached, seemingly super jealous of the new mother-son dynamic Liv's got going on when they talk about it. At the lab, Warner informs Olivier that Caitlin died on the table at the hospital and that they can't be sure she was raped. Finn and Munch then uncover the reason why everyone at the party was so eager to write lewd shit on Caitlin's mug. It just so happens she'd compiled a laylist that a friend leaked out detailing the encounters with men she'd banged at the ad agency they all worked at over the past 3 years. The unit chases down every guy from the laylist who was at Jill's kick-ass loft party, eventually leading them back to Jill, who said Caitlin hadn't been invited to the party, but Finn busts out the texts Jill sent inviting her off the Evite list. Jill then confesses to shoving Caitlin into the mirror while they were arguing over Caitlin, almost ruining her relationship with one of the guys on the laylist, but when accusations of sodomizing Caitlin enter the mix, she's like, nah, dog, I didn't do that shit. Then Warner drops in with quite the bombshell. The evidence of sexual assault was from one of the paramedics when she was being transported to the hospital. The paramedics cover for one another when questioned, and then Munch runs O'Doul's name through the database and finds out that he can be tied to robberies reported shortly after those paramedics made visits to the robbery victims' homes. When Munch told FDNY that Clark Tinta might be raping women in the back of their ambo, they give him everything they've got on both of the first responders. O'Doul tries to play the "we're all brothers here" card when they call him out on the robberies, but when the prospect of being charged with accessory to a serial rapist is put on the table, O'Doul agrees to help them sting his partner Tinta. Stabler then finds out that Liv didn't send in Calvin's DNA to the lab to find his father. O'Doul gets his partner to thank him for covering with the cops the day before, and then Tinta starts bragging about his various ambo rapes over coffee while O'Doul is wired up, only to see Finn and Stabler close in. Tinta throws a chair through the window, leaps out, and jumps into the back of the ambo, where he pulls out an empty syringe and kills himself with an air embolism while Finn and Stabler watch.
Such a good scene.
It's a good scene. You're like, is he really going to do that? Is that what is he doing? What I think he's doing? Oh, yeah, he's doing it. Then Stabler swings by Liv's with information pulled from one of the robberies. A set of prints at the bathroom mirror belong to none other than Calvin's mom, Vivian Arliss.
Boo.
After Benson and Stabler have it out over her dragging her feet on trying to find either of Calvin's parents, Gregan and Hardwick tell Liv and Stabler that they're off the case to avoid any appearance of impropriety, as she's the current legal guardian of the suspect's child. Gregan asks Finn and Munch to take to the street, but obviously Benson doesn't listen to orders from Gregan. And when Tutunch ask the Donahoes about Vivian and her partner, Sarah, being there, they tell them they just answered these questions when Olivia was there like 20 minutes ago. Benson finds Vivian holed up in a hovel in the South Bronx, where she places Vivian under arrest for the murder of her serial rapist father, only to have Vivian plead with Liv to just let her go be happy with Sarah so that Liv can just keep Calvin, which is all she wants, clearly. Elliot takes corporeal form from the ether and tells Liv to make her choice, implying he's got her back. Cut to interrogation, where somehow Liv and Elliot are able to question Vivian despite the fact that they are not supposed to be working this case. Vivian tells them how she brained Burlock with his frying pan. Cragen barges in, yanks Olivia out of the room, and excoriates them for fucking the case up. But then Sarah Hoyt, Vivian's partner in crime and love, comes into the precinct and confesses that no, actually, she killed her lover's rape monster dad. At Sarah's arraignment, bail gets set, and the defense lays the groundwork for the exact plan of attack at trial that Hardwick and Cragen warned B&S about. Liv and Viv have it out on the courthouse steps when Vivian asks to see Calvin, but after a sprung, Sarah heads off to get the car. Shots ring out. Benson runs to the parking garage to find Sarah slumped over the steering wheel with three brand new holes. And Vivian completely loses it, screaming through tears that Olivia is responsible for everything bad in the world. Surveillance video at the garage show Burlock's old terrorized prison bitch Jason Gamble to have been at the scene. But when Elliot brings him in, he insists it was someone else who shot Sarah three times and then spat in her dead face. Elliot tells him to have fun trying to get the jury to believe that shit, but once again, Deus Ex Melinda comes in right then with evidence supporting Gamble's claim. The shooter cum spitter was Calvin's fucking dad. That sad sack piece of shit killed Sarah because she stole his woman away and ruined all their lives by pulling Vivian back into a drug-addicted black hole. Then CPS comes to the precinct and rips a screaming Calvin from Olivia's arms on Vivian's orders, and we get a, "That's why you should follow Cragen's orders, Liv!" Dick Wolf.
I forget when Noah becomes Noah. Season 16, something like that?
I think it's the last 16? Episode of 15.
Okay. I don't understand whoever was running the show at the time, watching these Calvin episodes and going, we want more of this. This is what we want.
Well, I think some of it's a Mariska thing.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just,
I mean, there's an obvious issue with continuing to just have Liv be a just like detective machine, you know?
Yeah, I get that. You need to change the character.
Like, where's the character going to go?
Yeah.
Because it's been 12 years.
I get that. But this episode was like, we're like in a fucking Ferrari Testarossa from like 1989 going 200 miles an hour on the freeway in sixth gear. I don't know how many gears they have. And it's like at minute 20, somebody downshifted into second gear. And yeah. The transmission is now far behind
dropped.
You. Just gone.
Yeah, and you were just rolling a momentum for the rest of the way.
Yeah. Before we get into it, Josh, what are you drinking?
Well, I've already drank a full, for listeners, that much Bullet Rye Rocks, and I've got a Hams.
A full-ass tumbler. Yeah.
Beautiful Hams.
So I know listeners love grocery store talk. I found the beer section at my
local... We were talking off-air about how I felt bad that he was drinking this.
I found the Trader Joe's beer selection, and I'm drinking their Boson American IPA, which is...
Awful.
Not good, but it is strong. No. So it's got that going for it, and it's very cheap. So
it's got that and only that going for it. Those Trader Joe's, those cans with that font on them are all avoid at all costs.
For the Patreon viewers.
Avoid them. Avoid them. They're terrible.
I'm going to try some of their other flavors just because it's
Do not do it. I haven't had a good one yet.
Well.
Yeah. Any of the ones with that font, don't get them.
Yeah, I'll probably switch to water, or maybe I have other beers too, so we'll see.
Yeah.
But man, should we jump into these guest stars? Yeah. I've got a surprise for you at the end of the guest star notes. Hopefully it's somebody you do not talk about.
Sure, hopefully.
We'll see.
All right, so we've already talked about Charlie Tahan, who's playing Calvin Arliss. We talked about him back in Munch My Benson episode 94, Do Buffalonians Dream of Erotic Meats? Mm-hmm. We were talking about season 13, episode 5, Missing Pieces.
Max and I were just on the very spot where Calvin was telling Liv that he's too old for this shit.
Okay.
Yeah, we were there today. Max had his first New York City hot dog today. We were down around Bryant Park. It was great.
All right, cool. Yeah. We've also talked about Austin Lissy, who's playing defense attorney Russell Hunter. He was obviously one of the
Bestie Boys
back in Munch My Benson episode 7, the sad sack POS has an inverted Jenny. Mm-hmm. We were talking about episode 1, season 7, Uncivilized. He's also been in subsequent episodes as this defense attorney, so obviously Brain Melter. And we've already talked about Melissa Sage Miller, who's playing ADA Jillian Hardwick here, one of the only recurring ADAs to not be in the main cast.
I feel like we've caught a lot of Hardwick episodes.
We kind of have, yeah, because she's only in like 12, I think.
Yeah.
We talked about her back in Munch My Benson episode 85. The whole second half of this episode basically is Stabler can't give everyone a ticket to the gun show, where we're discussing season 12, episode 13, Mask. I am going to hold off on talking about Joseph Sikora, who's playing Jason Gamble, because he's much more prominent in the other episode with Vivian Arliss.
Right on.
And he doesn't really have that much to do here. He's sort of an afterthought, so I'd rather talk about him then. First up, Maria Bello, who's playing Vivian Arliss. She was born in Norristown, Pennsylvania, to a contractor and a school teacher. She grew up in a working-class Catholic family and graduated from Archbishop John Carroll High School in Radnor, PA, which my ancestors helped settle.
Oh.
She majored in political science at Villanova. She was planning on becoming a lawyer, but took an acting class during her senior year. She honed her acting skills in a number of small, off-Broadway, New York theater productions. She got her break when she was cast in the spy series Mr. and Mrs. Smith, starring opposite Scott Bakula.
Oh.
It was canceled after 8 episodes. She parlayed the momentum from Mr. and Mrs. Smith into a guest starring role in 3 episodes of ER that were so successful that they asked her back as a series regular in next season. After a season in the main cast on ER, on which she became good friends with Mariska Hargitay, she moved into the film world, playing large parts in Permanent Midnight, Payback, Coyote Ugly, Duets, Autofocus, The Cooler, for which she was nominated for a Best Supporting Actress Golden Globe and SAG Award, The Secret Window, Assault on Precinct 13, A History of Violence, for which she was nominated for a Best Actress in a Drama Golden Globe, Thank You for Smoking, World Trade Center, The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, The Company Men, The Grown-Ups film series, Abduction, Prisoners, The Fifth Wave, and Max Steel. Now, after these 2 episodes of SVU, she pivoted back into the television world, starring in the American remake of the British Helen Mirren star vehicle, Prime Suspect, and the Kiefer Sutherland star vehicle, Touch, both of which lasted just a single season. She played Billy McBride's ex-wife in Goliath Season 1. She had a main role in NCIS for Seasons 15 through 18. She'll have a recurring role in the Netflix dramedy Beef, which will star Steven Yeun and Ali Wong. She has a son with TV exec ex-boyfriend Dan McDermott. After writing about being in a same-sex relationship for the New York Times, she published a book, Whatever Love is Love, questioning the labels we give ourselves. She became engaged to Chef Dominique Crenn on December 29th, 2019, and as of at least 2020, they were still together.
She's way too ripped to play a junkie.
Yeah, she's also probably way too good to actually be in this episode. But
yeah, to be this character, specifically.
This isn't long after A History of Violence.
Yeah.
I never understood how her in A History of Violence didn't really, really blow her up.
Yeah,
she's
right?
So fucking good in that
movie.
Yeah,
absolutely. She had a really good, like, a run of, like, she was in really good movies.
Yeah.
Who knows?
So then we've got Kat Foster, who's playing Sarah Hoyt. She was born in Oakland. Her father managed bands. As a child, she performed in the Nutcracker with the San Francisco Ballet. She graduated from the college preparatory school and studied at Tisch. Obviously studied acting there. She's an active member in the New York theater community, winning a Best Actress Award at the 2003 New York International Fringe Festival for the play Final Countdown. You might have seen her in the Netflix movie Rebirth. She's in one episode of Criminal Intent, one of the original series, and one other SVU as this character. She's also been main cast in the first two seasons of Till Death, the Brad Garrett show, Your Family or Mine, and Jean-Claude Van Johnson. She had recurring roles in The Unusuals, Weeds, Royal Pains, Franklin and Bash, The Goodwin Games, Bad Teacher, CSI Vegas, and The Rookie. She's married to Jim Husted, with whom she has a daughter, Amelia. Then we've got Mike Starr, who's playing Mike O'Doul.
Yeah.
He was born in Flushing, New York, to a retail employee and a meat packer. His older brother is character actor Beau Starr, who played Henry's father in Goodfellas. He graduated from Hofstra. He has 249 credits.
He
You've
sure
probably
does.
Seen him in a fucking lot of things.
You've seen him in a lot of things.
Yes.
He's been in many iconic films.
Yeah. Like, my list of films is 7 document lines long.
Yeah.
Or 5. Sorry, 5.
Yeah.
So he's in Cruising, The Natural, The Last Dragon, The Money Pit, Radio Days, Funny Farm, Punchline, Lean on Me, Collision Course, Uncle Buck, Goodfellas, Miller's Crossing, Billy Bathgate, Free Jack, The Bodyguard, Cabin Boy, The Hudsucker Proxy, Trial by Jury, Ed Wood, Clockers, Snake Eyes, Summer of Sam, The Black Dahlia, Bad Santa 2, and most notably, Dumb and Dumber.
If you're wondering why he looks familiar, it's because he's in everything.
Literally everything. He's also been main cast in the shows Ed, Hardball, which was a short-lived baseball show co-starring Bruce Greenwood, Alexandra Wentworth, Joe Rogan, Steve Heitner, and Dan Florek, and Easy Streets.
Yeah. Well,
so that was a show that happened in between Dan Florek's run on the original series and SVU. He was also in the show Easy Streets in the main cast. He had recurring or appeared in multiple episodes of The Tracy Ullman Show, Wise Guy, Martial Law, Falcone, Joan of Arcadia, Days of Our Lives, The Young and the Restless, The Mob Doctor, Public Morals, and Mr. Mercedes. He was in 3 episodes of the original series, 1 episode of Criminal Intent, and 5 episodes of Chicago Fire.
Yeah.
Then we've got James Martinez, who's playing Clark Tinta.
Uh-huh.
He was born in Jackson Heights, Queens, went to Forest Hills High School, started out doing impressions at comedy clubs at 16, attended Juilliard. He's been in the films The Sessions and Run All Night. He was in 2 episodes of the original series and 1 episode of Criminal Intent. He was a series regular in Gravity and Love, Victor. He's had recurring roles in Low Winter Sun, Aquarius, Queen of the South, House of Cards, Major Crimes, One Day at a Time, Tell Me a Story, and The Deuce.
Mm-hmm.
Now I feel like I know who you're going to go off the beaten path for.
But anyway,
I've got 4 more.
Okay.
But they'll all be quick.
Okay.
None of these people have any biographical information.
Okay.
Jack Gwaltney, who's playing David Drecker,
mm-hmm.
Calvin's father. He was born in Roanoke and raised in Charlottesville, Virginia. He's in the films Casualties of War, Vital Signs, Trial by Jury, G.I. Jane, The Siege, and Safe. He was also main cast on the Adrian Pasdar star vehicle Prophet and had a recurring role on Damages. He's been in 3 episodes of the original series, 2 episodes of the Cabot spinoff Conviction, 2 episodes of Criminal Intent, 1 episode of Homicide, and 2 other SVU as different characters, including in Lake's last episode, which is less than 3 full fucking years before this ep, where Lake fucking kills him.
Nice.
I don't know how you go back to the well that quickly on this guy. Whatever.
Oh, he's in that safe, not the one with Julianne Moore where she's allergic to Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah, the more much more recent one.
Yeah.
Then we've got Rita Gardner, who's playing Mrs. Donahoe. Mm-hmm. She was born in New York, studied drama at HB Studio in Greenwich Village. She was part of the original cast of The Fantastics, which is, or at least per Wikipedia, is the world's longest running musical.
Yeah.
She's done a ton of stage work. She's also in three episodes of the original series, One Criminal Intent, and two other SVUs, including Chat Room, where she was the granny running the titular granny panty hustle.
Nice.
In Munch My Bets in episode 47.
Yeah, nice. What a classic episode.
Oh, yeah. She's in the films P.S. I Love You and Shiva Baby, which I just watched. She had a recurring part in Little Voice, 30 Rock, and Falling Water. She was married to playwright Herb Gardner. We've got Jose Ramon Rosario, who's playing Paul Vareka.
Okay.
We saw him way back in Munch My Benson's episode 6. It was a best of Culkins. It was a worst of Culkins, where we talked about season 5, episode 2, Manic, where he was playing a different character. This is one of four different characters he's played on SVU. He's also been in two episodes of Criminal Intent, one Chicago PD, four TOSs, and one New York Undercover. He had a recurring part on Oz, Flight of the Conchords, The Good Wife / Fight, and Little Voice. He had small roles in The New West Side Story, The Wolf of Wall Street, Get Him to the Greek, The Day After Tomorrow, Mystic River, 2 Weeks Notice, Stepmom, and Tremors 2, Aftershocks. Last one I've got is Cornelius Jones Jr., who's playing Dr. Cutler. This is one of four SVUs as at least two different characters, including season 13, episode 19, Street Revenge, where he's playing an ESU tech, which we talked about back in Munch My Benson, episode 17, Fantastica.
Yeah, we sure did.
He looks to have relocated to LA as his credits post-2014 are all on LA projects like I'm Dying Up Here and You're the Worst.
All right.
So that's all I've got.
Yeah, so I just have one to add on to, but this was actually kind of fruit was born of a different tree that led to this delightful surprise.
My guess is that it is Caitlin.
No.
Okay.
It is Mr. Donahoe, played by Thomas Ryan.
I looked him up.
So I have to say,
but I didn't do a biographical dig on him.
I didn't do any biographical shit.
Okay.
Don't care. But sure. When I looked at his page, you know, the known four, I always look at the known four before I scroll further down. His known fours included Summer School.
Yeah.
And The Principal, the Ray Don Chong, Lou Gossett Jr., Jim Belushi star vehicle. Another classic. So, of course, my interest was piqued, obviously, right?
Sure.
And he's been acting for a very long time. He has many, many credits. He's acting in, like, Chips and...
Yeah, because he's old as fuck.
Three's Company, shit like that. But he was in Wolfen back in 1981, which makes this...
Jesus Christ. Everyone's in Wolfen.
This is at least the third, possibly fourth time we've had Wolfen appear.
I think it's at least four. It might be five.
But with that being said... I found a way to stream Wolfen, Josh.
Okay.
And I found it because earlier, while in the process of watching this episode, I was thinking that the Tinta storyline really made me want to watch the 1996 Crash. Not
okay. Sure.
The
sure.
good crash.
Yeah. The good crash, not the bullshit one.
Not the bullshit one that won Best Picture, because Hollywood is extremely dumb.
Super dumb.
So dumb. I mean, that movie is unwatchable trash. Just utter dog shit. Anyways, so I started looking, how could I watch Crash? Crash is not available for streaming anywhere.
The Cronenberg Crash again.
The Cronenberg Crash. The good crash. Yeah. Can't stream it anywhere. But somehow I was led to an R Letterbox. It's a Reddit forum where somebody posted this question. Does anyone know where I can watch Crash 1996? And in reading through this thread, I was led to a website called 123movies.net. So it's actually www.0123movies.net. I don't know if you've ever spent any time there. But yeah, they do have Crash on there. The Crash is like SD, not great. They also have Wolfen in a slightly better quality. It's 720.
Yeah, that's palatable.
Yeah, it's watchable quality. And they have the whole thing. I'm looking at it right now. And I think...
I mean, it's awesome.
But I just don't... I don't.
Yeah, for Movie Club?
I think we should watch this for Movie Club. It keeps coming out.
For the July entry?
Yeah, it's what? Gregory Hines, right? Is he like tap dancing his way
through? There are a lot of people in it. Yeah, he's a tap dancing werewolf. No. Who knows? We'll find out when we watch it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in probably 15 years.
Yeah, but don't worry. I've bookmarked this page. I can't imagine anybody's like done anything to it in quite some time. So
yeah.
I assume it'll be up for the next month and a half, hopefully.
Probably.
But
If not, it's probably like $3 to rent anywhere.
It is. It's like $2.99 to rent.
Yeah, it's very cheap. But yeah, for patrons.
But it is available.
For our munchies.
Crash, you can't VOD Crash anywhere.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
sucks.
That's because it's too good.
Yeah, no, it's too good. It it's blew just people's too good. Minds. But, so anyways, that was...
I mean, everyone started jerking off in car crashes and...
Or, you know, I mean...
Or scar fucking. I mean, there was a lot of scar fucking in car crashes that came because of crash.
It was influential. But...
it started a movement. in more ways than one. Okay.
Oh, it moved, Josh. It moved.
Oh, it moved.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Notes. I'm really curious to see where you went off. I went off in a, maybe the place I went off is obvious, but I don't think so.
I mean, I think we both went off in the same place. I just think we went off in slightly different directions. I'm assuming that you went off on Caitlin's, like,
yeah, I did. Like,
lay list. So did I. I just,
I read the entire actual thing that this is ripped from the headlines on.
How long is it?
It's 42 pages on a PowerPoint presentation. Some of the pages are like just pictures and shit.
So that sounds like a good segue to the rip from the headlines.
No, no, I'm not. Okay. It's not big enough to have to do a full rip from the headlines. Nice. So I'm not going to bother with that.
Let's just start at the top because my notes are thick for the first 10 minutes. Slightly thinner for the next 10 minutes.
And then almost non-existent.
Yeah, gone.
Yeah, once we get to the really heavy Calvin storyline, it's like, wait, why are we doing this?
So this party for a house party, this party is...
Adam, it's a kick-ass loft party per the Evite.
It's fucking massive. Okay, and also, like...
Who has this kind of loft in New York? Or LA? I was about to say LA, but they don't have it there either.
What kind of, like... What 20-something copywriter at an ad agency.
Yeah, sorry, you're not actually making that much in those positions.
You know, so Max and I, like, walked down, like, we walked around Midtown during lunch hour. We, like, walked up Madison Avenue where all these offices are. I saw about 1,500 people that were at that party today.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They can't afford that loft. I saw so many guys wearing the exact same navy blue slacks and lighter blue Oxford. Every single one of them was wearing.
Oh, you gotta monochrome that shit.
And they were all, like, walking in a pack where there was a guy who was clearly, like, the intern last year who was telling them, like, how to weave your way politics-wise through the office. Sure. And I was like, man, Max... Keep your fucking ears covered. Do not let them poison you. Do not let them kill your spirit.
Knowing what we know later, doesn't it seem nuts that Jill wouldn't have been keeping low-key tabs on Caitlin? Like, what was her fucking play? How is she hoping this plays out?
Oh, yeah. Who was she thinking that it was going to get blamed on?
Like, yeah, yeah. So her best case scenario is that Caitlin dies and it doesn't get pinned on her.
Yeah.
That's her only play where she gets off scot-free.
Uh-huh. Because either Caitlin wakes up and says, that bitch
what is she hoping for? She's hoping for fucking amnesia?
Yeah.
What, is she in a soap opera? Like, what the fuck? It doesn't make any sense.
Long before we get there, Josh. So Jill is like yelling at people for dancing on the tables, but she's hired like, I don't know, like a happy hardcore DJ or something. I don't even know what you describe that guy's music as.
I think she hired Polaris.
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
Sorry. Inside joke that no one gets. That was just for Adam.
It did look like him.
Jeremy will enjoy it too.
So the next question I have, so there's two, well, they're like straight coding dudes who are apparently like hitting a beer bong, but they're empty beer bongs. Which is, I was a little disappointed. Like, put some apple juice in there or something. Like, make your extras drink a little bit.
Give someone fucking diabetes by making them beer pong apple juice for 15 takes.
Still, is there like a sexual name for two straight dudes like staring at each other longingly in the eyes while they shove beer pongs down their throats? Like, it seems like it's a thing. It seems like you should be able to find this on Urban Dictionary.
It at least seems like it should be. Yeah.
Oh, and then later on, we're like panning through the party. There's like two chicks just like kind of sitting in the midst of this like chaos where there's like undulating bodies and dancing flesh. And there's just two chicks like sitting there like smoking shisha out of a hookah, having a conversation with each other.
Like, I'm sure that's a great conversation.
I'm sure they're like, whoever's like, kids these days, they like shisha. Let's throw a hookah in there. You know, it's like,
yeah.
All right. Anyways, so they love markering faces on SVU. This is something that
clearly
is something
markering women's faces.
Yeah. As the one dude says, you pass out, you get chiefed. That's just how things go.
Yeah, that's ethnically sensitive.
Yeah. So yeah, they're drawing like take it here, slut, and drawing arrows.
There's a lot of referring to her casually as a slut.
Uh-huh.
I mean, some of it's to try to like get Jill.
Yeah.
Get her dander up. Mm-hmm. But oh bueno.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. And I think you got to come up with a different play than just leaving her on the pile of coats.
That's my problem.
The guys who are drawing out the markers, I saw what I should have counted. There's like at least 6 or 7 people standing over her drawing on her with markers.
Mm-hmm.
Not one of them saw the massive gaping head wound leaking blood out the back of her head that eventually killed her.
Well, because it was conveniently just bleeding into her hair and only on the coat directly underneath her head and not bleeding out into any way. Because when you look at the shot, because I watched the second time, and when I was looking at the shot the second time, you couldn't actually see any blood. Like, I honestly think that they didn't bloody her up until after they took that master shot.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was just like it's a second cut and they have blood when she's reaching her
hands.
Yeah,
and then they reset, because I mean otherwise it's that actress is just miserable sitting there getting blooded because she does not have a line and is only a featured extra.
Yeah, but we see her.
We see her blouse torn open.
Yeah, we see her blouse torn open. We see her.
We're also meant to think about her being raped by a paramedic later.
Yeah, we see her slut markered face like on the wall of the precinct. A lot.
Do you think that went on a reel?
I'd put it on there. I did not care for the line they had one of the under five say. So one of the girls who's leaving called Jill a fun hater.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Now, I don't know if you have any more to say about before the crime scene is being investigated.
Okay, a little bit. In a city like New York, why would everyone here at this party have a huge problem with Caitlin being there?
Yeah.
Seems odd that her lay list would have only been pulling from like a single friend group.
I guess maybe they all work in the same firm.
Yeah, but like, it just seems weird that like over what we're supposed to believe is 3 years, that she just banged guys here at this ad agency if she was putting together this lay list.
Yeah, exactly. Josh, there's a reason why this wasn't very well thought out, this plot line, because it doesn't last very long.
Well, yeah, it makes it to the first commercial break, basically.
This is definitely an episode where if you walked away from it at any time and you came back, you would have no idea that you're still watching the same episode.
You would have no idea how long you stepped away for.
Exactly.
Like, you're wondering if you lost time and you're in the next episode already because it's...
Yeah, you're like, what year is this?
What the fuck? It's wild how quickly this episode just takes the rip from the headlines thing and rips it up.
Yeah.
Throws it away.
Uh-huh.
Because even while they're laying the groundwork for the rip for the headlines thing, they're also really just setting up the fucking baffling
insanity.
The Liv B plot becomes the A plot, which almost never happens on this show.
That's true.
We're not watching a show that's like Curb, you know, where all of the plot lines come together in some way that makes sense.
Yeah.
This show doesn't do that.
I was just thinking about, you know, you could do like a Twitter account, Seinfeld Victims Unit or something like that, where, where they all do wrap up neatly. But yeah, it is weird that the B plot takes over. But still, what's even weirder is that there's this interlude between what is supposed to be the A plot and what ends up being the A plot. And there's this baffling storyline with the paramedics that only serves to get Vivian in the same open house.
Only serves to make the FDNY look bad. Like, I wonder if they were paid by NYPD to make FDNY look bad because they were taking too much egg in the face.
Yeah, I mean, well, seriously, people like the fire department. People think of the fire department as being heroes.
Yeah, they actually, not rapers.
They want to
rapers and robbers.
They want to call them when when there's a problem. Oh, yeah, man. As opposed to the other guys.
Okay, so we jump over to Liv and Calvin, and it would have saved a bunch of time if they just let her have Calvin.
Yeah.
We could have jumped to her kid being in middle school and never would have had to suffer through Grandma Sheila.
No, no Grandma Sheila.
Because I don't think Calvin's necessarily bad.
No.
I think Charlie Tahan's like a solid kid actor.
Sure.
I don't think that the new baby Doe is bad still in the newest episodes, but the storylines just aren't fun. But like, at least with this, it would have cut out 10 years of it.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't have had to see him like baby talking about blueberry pancakes and stuff, which is like, it's sweet, but when you're like downshifting the episode. Yeah,
when you're a show about rapes and it's just.
And like, I mean, Calvin like had some good zingers, you know, he said that thing about I didn't write down any notes about Calvin, but
whatever,
poor thing. I'm going to talk about Calvin's drawing because it does seem like it's maybe slightly childish for how old Calvin's supposed to be, but
to be fair, it's probably better than anything I would draw.
Yeah, I would say. But Liv is like wearing a uniform. When does she ever wear a uniform?
Yeah,
which I
don't know how he would have seen her in one, but I guess that's how a child would represent
a cop. I don't know.
I mean, is he gonna put her in like a low-cut sweater?
Yeah, right. He's going to put her in that. Remember that silk floral thing that she was wearing in. Oh,
the weird, like, kimono type
thing? I think that was in Payback, wasn't it? That kimono thing? No, it couldn't have been.
No, it's not in Payback.
That was in much older.
No, it's way newer.
Yeah.
It was in the Shiri Appleby one.
That's right.
Not the Military Justice Dearly Beloved.
Yeah. Excellent recall, Josh.
I don't know how I remember that.
Yes, we put her in that. Still, I thought it was a little weird to have this like kid who's been traumatized by his mom abandoning him and his dad not being in the picture, that he would draw a picture of Liv like shooting a gun at the bad guys.
Sure.
It's a little weird. So when we go to the crime scene, when I watched it the second time, I realized that there was definitely something up, because when have you ever seen them A, have like a name for the paramedics, and B, even have the paramedics interacting with the cops? The paramedics are always just like extras kind of walking in and out.
Unless Finn is in the back of the ambo and the paramedics telling Finn to stop fucking questioning, like, just let this person almost die in the back of the ambo.
Yeah, sure, that shit happens. But like never when they're just like on the scene carting away the victim.
Sure. But yeah, big red flag.
Yeah.
So Elliot's jealous that he's not getting all of Liv's attention. Mm-hmm. He's also probably trying to manage your expectations because she's getting too attached and kind of isn't aware that she is, but
he's kind of being a dick about it.
I don't know how the percentage works out to where, like, okay, how much is him self-serving and how much is him trying to like help Liv? Self-serving 40, help Liv 60.
The thing is, Liv wants to have a family, clearly, but she doesn't want to have the baggage of a significant other, right? So why can't Elliot just be a supportive partner, man? You know, why can't he be like, you know, I don't want you to get your hopes up too much because this might not work out, but I'm glad that you're having a good time with this child that's staying with you right now. Sort of extra legally.
Well, he's got to keep the love of his life sort of unencumbered.
Yeah.
Okay, so they get to the hospital. Elliot asks, Doc, is our victim awake yet? And the doctor's like, I hope not. She's in the morgue. We get to the reason why she's died. We don't really need to talk about the Warner scene there, I don't think.
No.
But Munch finds My Lay List,
yes,
a scholarly treatise on office relationships by Caitlin Lamarck. It was a 32-page PowerPoint document on the 15 dudes she slept with in the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. The first slide they show on the screen for Troy has different copy.
Yes.
But the slides for Brett, Kevin, Tommy, and Victor
all have the same copy. I can read you all of the copy.
Oh, not just the same copy, but also after their name is changed the first time, it's Danny through the rest of it.
Yes, I'm aware, Josh. And I can read you the copy for all of them. Because what took me so long to do, because I was getting frustrated because of the way Hulu works, obviously, right?
Oh, I know. It was very difficult. I kept getting the little window thing.
I was trying to like let it play and like write what I could see. But this is the thing that I'm so excited about and proud of myself.
Okay.
I learned how to take a screenshot on Hulu on modern operating systems. This is going to be a lesson for the munchies out there. So if you use Chrome as your browser and you go to settings in Chrome, mm-hmm. you go down to advanced settings and then system. And then under system, there is a tab that says use hardware acceleration when available. And it is turned on by default. And if you turn that off, it is going to force you to reboot. But once you reboot, you can take screenshots from Hulu and Netflix.
Nice. Can you capture video too?
I did not attempt to capture video. I assume you can. So I assume you can do like a capture part of a screen to get a video segment.
Okay.
I was able to sometimes I use the small one where Shift Command 4 where you can drag a window. That worked. Yeah. But Shift Command 3 was what I was using for this because I just needed to just fire away because I really wanted to get all the copy for all of those mm-hmm. slides. And so I have both of those sets of copy. So the first copy, the Troy copy, says
very briefly on screen too.
Yeah.
It's crazy that that one is on for like 2 seconds and then they immediately smash cut to the next four, which are the same copy with just the first name. The first name is mentioned,
not the other
swapped
times.
Out, but the spacing isn't changed either.
Exactly.
It's insane.
Exactly. It's like somebody whited it out and put it back in.
Yeah.
Okay. The scenario. Troy has been one in the art department for photo shoots here at the firm for about 6 years. This is like the language in the thing. It's a little weird.
Yeah.
Every year he has a 4th of July barbecue to which I have been invited each year.
Yep.
Having nothing to do this year, I decided to go. After a couple of burgers and beers, I was wanting a hot dog.
Oh, yeah.
So we took off on his ATV for a little four-wheel action. Pros. On our ATV adventure, I was surprised to learn that he knew his way around the back roads and put me at ease going into unfamiliar territory.
All right. So that's like Lady Mary and Pamuk on horseback through the muddy creek.
Some vivid...
vivid butt sex.
Imagery. Cons. Things were over pretty quickly, just as I was getting into it. And then it's cut off below that. Mm-hmm. You can make out bringing in the next 4th of July with a bang. You can make that out.
That is sort of the setup that was in the original, too.
Yeah.
And the thing they're ripping from the headlines.
Nice. Under Brett. So Brett was the first one. He's the only one I screen cap. But because
Troy is the first one.
I know. But the first one of the next kind of copy is Brett. Uh-huh. All the other ones have the same. It's just.
It says Brett, Kevin, Tommy, Victor in the first where the name is mentioned. Funny that they don't have Danny in here.
No, they don't have
because
Danny.
Because that would at least make sense.
Not the only funny part about Danny, but we'll get there in just a second because that's the next screen cap. Oh, they did change the meter to the right of the photos.
Yeah, they changed the meter above as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the scenario, after lunch one Friday afternoon, Brett, big awkward space, from pre-production stopped by to drop off some portfolios. The office was quiet due to the blizzard that hit earlier that day. I followed
Danny.
I followed Danny into the kitchen and asked if he'd like something hot. Then mm-hmm. he put his marshmallow in my hot chocolate. Pros.
All butt sex.
Pros. Okay, the above description does not do Danny justice. A marshmallow does not exactly conjure up feelings of reliability in a man. But one thing is for sure, he has the, all caps, biggest penis.
Uh-huh.
Exclamation point, exclamation point, uh-huh. exclamation point, exclamation point. Cons, he fell asleep in record time afterwards. So he did her in the butt in the break room and then fell asleep.
Just next to the fridge.
Yeah.
now, he's credited as having the biggest penis.
But we have a slide where it shows.
Yes. Then we get to the phallic bar graph.
it's not a pie chart.
Only Kevin and TJ have smaller dicks than Danny on the graph.
Exactly. Dean and Steven and Jeff all have much bigger dongs than Danny.
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of slinging heat.
Okay.
There's no teenuses in there. There's no teen eye.
This.
No micro penises.
Where...
Step into the world of power. Loyalty. and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
All right, so there are a couple issues with this slide specifically.
The It Matters slide?
Yeah, It Matters. We're told that this is a treatise compiled over 3 years, but the Dick bar graph chart runs with monthly encounters from September to May.
I know.
So that is not 3 years.
Maybe there's more pages of Dick bar graphs.
No, they say it's 15. Mm. They say the number of guys that are listed, and it's 15 guys, but it's over like 7 months. So the other issue, the Dick bar graph has three of the 15 guys swinging 10-inch hogs. And all but 2 or 7 inches are larger.
Yeah.
Now,
this is not a...
This is where I did my research.
Fantastic, Josh. Fantastic.
Though subsequent studies have shown that his original study overshot the average dick size by around a full inch longer than what is now considered average, the original Kinsey penis size survey found that only 1% of men have a penis between 7 and 8 inches. 6 in 1,000 have a 9-inch dong, and just 0.2%, 2 in 1,000, have a dick larger than 9 inches. So, 90% of males have a dick within an inch of the average erect dick size of 5.17 inches or 13.12 centimeters. Mm. If we're to believe this chart, she only fucked 2 of 15 guys outside of the 98th percentile or higher of dick size.
Fantastic.
Which makes you wonder how these guys are getting hired. Is the hiring manager making them show hard and be exceptional to get the job?
It's how to get ahead in advertising, Josh.
I'll have the link to the average penis size article in the show notes.
Please. I could maybe upload all the screenshots so people can see them.
Also, my next big question is, how trustworthy are her measurements? What was her methodology for figuring out how big these dicks were?
This is a good question, right? Because if you think about it, it's hard enough to measure your own dong, right? Like, much less like have somebody who in the throes of passion, whilst getting one's marshmallow dipped in one's hot chocolate, maybe she's got like anal notches so she can like sense each centimeter that it's gone in or something. Outlandish stuff. Whoever produced this content really went all above and beyond.
But like literally all but 2 of the 15 guys are 98th percentile or higher in dick size.
Fantastic.
Like, it's completely irrespective of reality unless that hiring manager is really making them show hard and be fucking swinging huge hogs.
We know it. They're all from one firm, so it's possible. This could be HR policy there.
I feel like there's a class action lawsuit coming. Then
you will be swinging a fucking slab of salami at this firm.
Yeah, you've got to be packing a large summer sausage. Okay, so then a friend put her shit online, which is lame. Stabler says she blogged about it, but she clearly didn't. Now, obviously, all of this is a takeoff on Karen Owen's faux sex thesis in 2010, while she was still attending Duke. She'd written a 42-page PowerPoint document that was distributed to 3 friends, one of whom forwarded it to People a few months later in September of 2010, right around the time they would have been writing this episode. The friend forwarding it caused it to go viral. It was entitled An Education Beyond the Classroom, Excelling in the Realm of Horizontal Academics, and her partners were ranked for performance, though size is only mentioned in descriptive terms, because how are you going to measure that in the wild? Okay, so then they start going to all of the people from the party who made the lay list, and they go to the Danny guy first. Mm-hmm. And when he says, she also said, I have the biggest penis. Like, his voice goes up in a hilarious way when he says penis. Like, on the normal episode, that is going to be the intro. Like, it is going to be, she says, I have the biggest penis.
Now, he doesn't, as we've seen conclusively. He's one of the few men with a...
He does in the text, though,
yeah.
Just not in the chart.
Yeah.
Because the chart was made irrespective of
reality.
The rest of the script, apparently.
I'm sure that was an inside joke. All those names were inside jokes with, like, various people who work in the art department.
Now, they pull Jill in eventually after guys are alternatingly pleased or displeased that they were on the lay list.
Yeah.
And they pull her in, and she's awful at lying.
Yeah. Terrible. Like, I mean, it's amazing how quickly this case is wrapped up. Just amazing. It's like whiplash. Yeah. What? It's over?
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, she sucks at lying. Finn has conclusive evidence that she lied.
Yep.
It's over.
Now, we never find out what sort of charges she'll be facing. I assume it's manslaughter, but we're never going to find out because the Vic is a, quote, slut, as everyone keeps saying. And I guess we're supposed to sympathize with Jill because her boyfriend Ash stepped out?
Yeah.
Fuck all that moralizing.
It is a little weird how much they kind of, like, they
discard the victim immediately.
But they also spent kind of a lot of time on, like, Jill's relationship with Ash and made that, like, a point for us to care about when we're, like, burning through shit. Like, we talked to that Ryan guy who seemed like a plausible, you know, he was angry enough.
The photographer.
Yeah. That was a weird photo shoot. There were two girls in, like, sexy sailor outfits going through hair and makeup. And it was just like, what is this for? Then we find out.
We get our paramedic per plot twist.
Yeah.
Clark Tinta immediately is objectifying every woman in the picture freely and openly. It is shocking.
Yeah.
Like, he immediately, like, oh, you traded up to Stabler. And then says that the fucking victim that they know is raped and that they know he had contact with says she was a cutie.
He says some really perverse fucking shit about
he obviously says more bad shit later. Yeah. But,
just amazing stuff. I guess they don't care because they're like the thin red line that allows you to rape and rob people that are like going through the worst moments of their lives.
Do they think they're the gun trace task force in Baltimore?
I know,
like,
seriously.
What the fuck?
Did they spend too much time with Danny Pino and the Shield in Los Angeles? You know, what's going on, man?
I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
So we go to the Donahoes and find out that Larry got boned by Bernie Madoff. Okay, so the Stabler has a pretty good idea that it's O'Doul who is covering.
Yeah, immediately.
So they bring him in, and they really make us think about Mike Starr's pubes.
They do. They bring up Mike Starr's pubes. And then Mike Starr...
And they also, by proxy, make us think about him pissing.
What I want to watch, Josh, so, you know, the Gene Cousineau masterclass on Banshee or whatever fake network it is.
Yeah.
I want to watch the Mike Starr masterclass because that look that he gives them when Liv brings up the fact that his pubes were smeared all over the bathroom, That is the look of somebody who has a fucking great career right there. Like, he goes, you found my pubes. Really? I doubt it.
Then he pulls the, come on, we're all brothers here. And it's like, is this what brothers do? A cover for rapers?
Not just rapers, right? Because, like, I suppose...
This is, like, one of the most odious kind of rapers that... I mean...
I don't want to say that there's levels because it's all bad, right?
It's all bad.
It's all bad.
Awful.
But there's
this is like
raping like women that are dying in the back of an ambulance while they're being taken to the hospital. It's really fucked up.
Yeah. Super fucked up. Okay. So Calvin's a brawler.
Getting in fights.
Yeah.
Precious little Calvin.
Before this, we get Elliot closing her drawer. Then he sees that she hasn't, despite what she's told him, sent Calvin's DNA swab in.
Yeah.
If he hadn't told us that, we never could have figured it out by just seeing what he was holding in his hand.
What do you mean?
Like, he literally says aloud. She never sent it in.
Okay.
To no one. To the audience, because I guess we needed to be filled in because we couldn't tell what that was.
Well,
it says Calvin's DNA sample or whatever on it.
I feel like sometimes they know that the audience is like making dinner while they're watching the show. You know, or something else.
I mean, I guess by season 12 at least, they're thinking, oh yeah, this has a long life in reruns.
Yeah.
They assume that people are not paying attention, so they have to fill them in. But
one quick note about Mike O'Doul. So he is said to have won 2 Prescott medals, and Prescott medals are a thing. They're the highest honor that can be bestowed upon a FDNY EMT. It's named after a paramedic named Christopher Prescott, who was killed responding to a car crash by another car in 1994.
Okay.
So, you know. I have an article about that, but I don't think it's that interesting. But it is a real thing.
So then we're treated to the clumsiest sting ever.
Yeah. It just seems like, shouldn't you like approach him? Like, why? I don't understand.
Why are they having coffee? Why is this happening over coffee? What? Whatever.
But like,
why is it like, it would seem more natural if it was actually happening in the ambo. The reason they're not doing that is because there are too many moving pieces and they didn't want to have to film it that way. But like,
yeah, they didn't have a driving stunt guy. They just had a like jumping through a plate glass window stunt guy. So,
yeah.
And yeah, exactly. It's a lot easier just to do that sequence than the other one. But paramedics, they stop, they get coffee, whatever. But I just don't understand why Finn and Stabler have to like stroll past the window that they're sitting at to come in and then stand
by the
door.
Well, because that's where the door is.
But they could have come from the other angle. There's like, you know, you could approach from two different directions.
Are we sure that there are multiple doors there, though?
No, but the door was, so they walked past.
I think assuming that they're going to assume that he's going to throw a chair through the window is like an extreme way that they would play out.
But I do think that they are walking by the window, though, and they're staring at him to give him like a, oh, something's fucked up.
We've got you.
Yeah. If they just came from the other direction, they would have surprised them a little bit more. And maybe they would have been able to put in a handcuffs.
So you're saying that they come from, like, let's say they're heading south. You're saying that they should come from...
They should have come from the other angle, from the other direction.
The east.
So if they're, yeah, if they're coming...
Or from the west.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're showing their hands too quickly.
Exactly. Anyway. Bad trade craft.
So then he rips O'Doul's shirt open, but then he takes the extra step of grabbing the wire, which we've already seen and don't need him to grab at all.
Yeah.
So this is two times in like 15 seconds. That they have like kind of held our hands a little too much to where it makes me feel like they think that I'm stupid.
Elliot's shown us the earpiece. Tinta's said that you're wearing a wire, and we've seen the wire. And then he grabs that and grabs it.
Then he throws the chair through the window, jumps out, jumps into the back of the ambo, which they apparently can't get back into.
Yeah,
he flips the table at the Stabler, and then he takes a syringe, plunges it into his neck, and kills himself with an air embolus.
Such a great look on his face, too. It's just like this, like absolute hate daggers, like hate grin. God damn, so good, man. I just gotta say that an episode that was about these paramedics that was like a little bit like slow down a bit to flesh out their odious crimes. Would have been so great.
It's such a bummer when we get to these episodes that are the sort of like fever dream in the first 25 minutes where it's like, oh no, it's three different things, and then like you play out the string on the last one.
Yeah.
But like when you get one of those first or second parts that you're like, why can't I just have gotten a whole episode about this?
Sure, and this one especially, it's like both of the first two, like it goes by commercial breaks, obviously, right? So the first commercial break, great. The party, love it. Fucking amazing. The second one, amazing. These paramedics, I'm going to read you what Tinta says to O'Doul while they're sitting there.
It's so odious.
Cutie in the car wreck last week. She was a nice piece. This is a woman that was in a car wreck who had to be transported to the hospital. That generally means injuries.
Uh-huh.
That blonde that OD'd, she even put up a little bit of a fight. It's like, what the fuck, man?
I just don't get how you...
I don't get anybody standing up for this guy. It's not that I don't get that somebody could have this kind of fucked up perversion. Like, that doesn't necessarily surprise me.
I don't get how, if you're that guy, you proffer that information.
I know.
Like... I don't get how you would think that you could... Okay, it's like with the two of us being white guys.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, some white guy will like just start showing you how racist they are. And you're like,
whoa,
why do you think I want to hear this, shithead?
Yeah, somebody you
don't
know.
It's like this playing out. Like, what the fuck, man?
Uh-huh.
Like, there are just certain things that I don't understand how people who engage in that would think that other people would want to hear about it ever.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's like trying to like kind of indoctrinate you to their level of thinking. But this is just like a whole different thing, man. How does this guy not know that what he's doing is... It's not like he grew up in a family where grandpa talked that way. Like, grandpa wasn't sexually assaulting people in the back of the ambulance while they were being transported with major injuries. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's like a fairly specific.
It's not like the William Lewis scenario where, like, William Lewis is a product, a direct product of his, like, you know, horrific upbringing.
Sure. Tinta, there's so many questions about Tinta's psychology, but one of the biggest ones is that he freely shares this information with other people, and that this other guy would go, like, you know what? I'm willing to confide that I nab the occasional wedding ring.
Yeah, that I nick some jewelry,
like,
here or there.
That I get a couple $100 worth of like gold to melt down and sell to somebody once in a while to this guy who's doing this shit. But I love that the writers of the show come up with this shit. This is fantastic work. And I just really wish that this this occupied the last 20 minutes of the episode.
Like, the episode really should end at the air embolism. If the episode ends there, because there is enough story in the first two acts that they could stretch out, let it breathe, have it be more interesting.
You could add
I understand that they have to play out the string on the fucking Calvin shit.
Yeah.
I get that. And they're probably tired of having a kid actor on set because of how difficult it is to shoot with a kid actor.
Yeah, what's the rule? Like 4 hours, right? Something like that?
Yeah, it's 4 hours. Yeah. And the time, I'm pretty sure, is 4 and 4. Like 4 hours in the classroom, 4 hours on set. And it makes the day really hard because you have to be at a point where you can start rolling. And when they're on set, you know, you kind of have to have wrapped whatever scenes you were shooting. And it's a logistical nightmare.
Yeah.
We're shooting with kids.
I'm taking notes on this. This is my only ticket out of poverty. So.
especially with your rent going up or whatever shit, the fuck's Jesus. Going on with that.
As it turns out, it's my rent is still well below market rate. So sucks to be all of us that live here.
yeah. It's weird. This is sort of like the Brenda Blethyn episode where the Vic in the beginning and anything resembling an SVU case is out the window by the halfway point. What about the Vivian shit is an SVU case?
It's none of it. Yeah, I don't understand. No. Especially since Liv has the child.
I mean, obviously the bigger actor in the episode is the one who's gonna have the like meaty shit in the second half. But
it's one of the problems they have with the confines of the show, right? And I think they seem to have kind of gotten away from that a little bit in later seasons, where they feel like they can't do character development without it being part of a case, right? So this is like a Liv character service episode.
I mean, I think a lot of the times that works better. It makes the episode mean more.
What they are able to do in the Warren Light years, especially, is allow the characters to like grow. Like they can have a scene where there's not, like in this one, they're doing Liv character service, but like they're still doing it like it's an SVU case, right? Which doesn't quite make sense, because for one thing, there's no reason that SVU would be investigating anything having to do with this, because it wouldn't be their case. And Liv is personally involved in it, so it wouldn't be her case either, even if it was SVU.
And don't worry, she stays involved even though she's personally involved.
Yeah, but it would be kind of more interesting if it was just like, I don't know. Sometimes it is interesting to see like Liv not at work, right? Like, do we need to have them interviewing Vivian to have it be interesting?
I think it's more interesting when it's thematically linked to the character's personal life and not directly linked, where you're seeing a sort of give and take with how the job and the life affect one another.
If they had a better way of doing A plots and B plots like concurrently, like Seinfeld.
Yeah. Or like Veronica Mars, which I'm rewatching.
Yeah.
Veronica Mars did it great.
Yeah.
And Veronica Mars would balance the A and B plot, and the B plot was the story arc for the season.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there's just kind of like the way that SVU tells time, I guess it's hard to do that maybe because kind of like the way time exists.
Don't worry, the whole telling time problem is going to be a problem later. Okay. So Stabler says Benson's dragging her feet trying to find Vivian, who disappeared. And I'm filling in the blanks for some people who maybe haven't seen the episode. But Vivian disappeared after Walter Burlock was murdered. Burlock was a violent serial rapist who Liv initially thought might be both her and eventually Vivian Arliss's father. DNA didn't match for Liv, but did for Vivian. Then at the end of the episode, Burlock was murdered, and in the course of the investigation, it was discovered that he'd been continuing to rape his prison bitch, Jason Gamble, after they were both released on parole. Like, I think he had him in, like, a captive situation. I had watched that episode a few months ago when we did one of the Calvin episodes, because I didn't really remember how he came into the picture. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the shit that we're unpacking in this episode. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the William Lewis shit, where it would have been nice to hit that other episode first, but whatever.
See, Josh, I'm just going to stop you there, because I'm delighted at the way we're progressing through Calvin's storyline. It's like an Italo Calvino novella.
Yeah. We're going backwards.
Yeah, we're going backwards.
We're going in reverse order of chapters.
I did not listen to a word you said about his backstory, and that's great because I'm excited. I'm really hoping we get penetration before we get trophies so we can...
That was the name of an episode, people.
That's the name of an...
Adam's not hoping to see a 10-year-old penetrated on television. No.
Absolutely not. No, that is the name of the second Calvin
episode. I wish I could name the episode that, but I absolutely cannot.
Yeah, but I was thinking the same thing. I was like, wow, that'd be a great episode title.
Not with a 10-year-old in it. Okay, so then Stabler calls her out on not sending the DNA swab to find Calvin's dad. Some complex emotions going on here. He definitely feels jealous, but she's clearly not doing good police work here.
No, she's not. It's terrible.
Really bad police work. Like, I'm hard pressed to, other than Gone Baby Doe Gone.
Yeah.
I'm hard pressed to think of an episode where she's doing worse police work. Like, more egregiously, like, you know, you're just fucking this case up.
Yeah. She's done it a few times. This is pretty bad.
This is, like, so obvious. Like, this is, like, how do you not understand that your personal relationship to this is going to fuck things up?
Yeah. It should be obvious. Your personal relationship.
Even when you're doing bad police work anyway.
I mean, again, like, a little bit of too much stating the obvious, because obviously, like, you shouldn't be investigating your own foster kid, right? Like, her, your own foster kid's mother. Mm-hmm. But then Hardwick comes out and tells her, hey, you can't be investigating this. Because we're all going to fucking go to hell if you do. But, which is sort of what happens.
So, obviously, Hardwick and Cragen tell Benson and then Stabler that they're both off the case.
Yeah.
And then they send Finn and Munch out to the streets. And they get to the Donahoes and to find out that Liv's beating them there. Then it seems like they just stop investigating, right?
Yeah.
Do you think they headed out and just started looking for bar locations?
Yeah, they were like, let's go see what Ken's up to. Let's go.
They're going to, well, they want to go. They want to find the right location for two Tunches.
Yeah. I really wonder, we don't know enough about Munch's life in New York. He strikes me as a Manhattan guy. I don't know that for sure. We do know that he's a Mets fan because he was going to go to that Matt Harvey game, but then ended up having to cancel.
We don't know that he's a Mets fan, though.
That's true. I go to both.
He could be an Orioles fan.
Yeah, you're right. He probably just goes to the games, whatever game seems more interesting. Yeah, he probably just loves
baseball because who doesn't?
He's a baseball guy. Yeah. No, that's a good point. But I could see
him living. Not who doesn't, but baseball's the best.
Yeah, I could see him living in my neighborhood, which is like a slice of the East Side that's like not absurdly rich.
It's kind of crazy. I'm kind of jumping a little ahead.
Please.
Here.
Yeah. I made a point to myself to not take any notes after the 20 minute mark. So
again, Finn and Munch get to the Donahoes. Liv's beating them to the punch. Yeah. And then Liv has her scene with Maria Bello.
Yeah.
And like Maria Bello comes in and fucking acts the shit out of like 3 minutes right off the bat. And granted, her character has been established in another episode.
Yeah.
But like, this is a fucking procedural.
Yeah.
She comes in and immediately is like, oh yeah, this is why this person's been nominated for awards.
Yeah, no shit. You know? Yeah. But I mean,
and granted, she's too ripped to play a junkie.
She's insanely ripped. I mean, she looks totally pumped. Mm-hmm. She looks like she can drop and do like 45.
She's a kickboxer.
See, that makes sense. She looks like a kickboxer.
She trains in Muay Thai.
It looks like she was about to just like bust out some one arm pull ups and shit right in front of us.
She was going to G.I. Jane all over their asses. I mean, she's really great in the scene though. Like,
absolutely.
Even though she's obviously way too A, hot and B, ripped to be a junkie.
I don't think that the Mrs. Arliss role, like, warranted fucking machinist. That's what it is. The machinist treatment. She's not gonna like go fast for 6 weeks before this role. What are you gonna do?
I mean, if we're gonna see in her tank top, I'd rather her be ripped and looking good.
Josh, there's a community of junkies that live a block away from me. They're a lovable sort, but they do not look like they could.
They don't look like Maria Bello.
They don't look like they could bench press my whole family, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of crazy how willing Stabler is to fuck his own shit up for Liv here. Mm-hmm. It's kind of wild.
He's got it bad, man.
He's just like, hey, it's your call. Mm-hmm. I'll back your play. I guess it's because she's had to back so many fucked up plays of his, but
maybe this is actually kind of like going back and making us feel better about O'Doul backing Tinta in the earlier scenes. Because it's like, this is what partners do for each other, no matter how fucked up it is, Josh.
I think there's a slight difference when you're EMTs versus, you know, police officers.
And when you're doing odious, horrible crimes.
I mean, as fucked up as what Liv is doing here is, it's not serial rape. Like, okay, so how the fuck did they ever get Vivian into interrogation without Craig and knowing? or anyone else, really. Mm-hmm. Like, they're questioning her uninterrupted.
They walk by somebody.
As far as I know, there's not a back door into interrogation.
Yeah. Munch is usually sitting at his desk, drinking a coffee, saying something sassy.
And Munch and Finn are both like, hey. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. Kragan's pissed with Koss.
Obviously.
Vivian's confession is bullshit, yeah. As we find out the instant Sarah waltzes into the precinct.
Yeah.
Then we get the Sid and Nancy, but they're both Nancy bit. Then Sarah gets shot in the court parking garage. Oh, sorry. The court shit's bullshit.
Yeah, the court shit's bullshit. But then, okay, so.
No, Sid and Nancy, obviously they're referring to Sid Vicious and Nancy, his girlfriend. There's a movie.
Yeah.
You can watch it. Called Sid and Nancy.
Yeah. The Chelsea Hotel.
It's not that interesting.
No, the movie sucks. They're irritating. They suck.
And Sid Vicious was not fucking talented.
No, he was only hired because he was...
He looked good and could hold a fucking bass low.
Yeah, he shouldn't even play. But he would cut himself with glass.
Well, he didn't play on the albums. Yeah. He sort of played on stage.
But he couldn't play like he was bad.
Sure.
And he would cut himself on stage.
Yeah, not a good bassist.
Yeah. There's a really funny interview with Paul Anka asking him about the Sid Vicious version of My Way. Paul Anka wrote My Way. It was really kind of charming because you could tell Paul Anka is such a pro. He's like, I don't care what covers my song as long as they're paying me fucking royalties.
Paid. Yeah, yeah.
But also he's like, I enjoyed it. The kid put his heart and soul into it, you know? Still, I forget exactly what the quotes
are. My old boss did a Paul Anka thing.
Nice. This thing with the parking lot. So for one thing, as you might know.
We're skipping the court shit. Doesn't matter. Immaterial.
The parking thing really bothers me. A, why is she just let... I was a little confused as to why she was just like...
She got bail.
But like, it happened really fast.
I think we're jumping ahead because Vivian had all the money from her mom dying. She still had all the money left over. So she was able to spring her pretty quickly.
Okay.
She was able to post bail without issue.
Okay, so Liv and Vivian are talking on the courthouse steps. This is
another good scene for like Bello to sort of like do her thing and call out Liv for her obvious bullshit.
I'm doing a New York State of Mind piece right here, Josh. So
okay.
So... people might realize that it's difficult to park in Manhattan, especially difficult to park in lower Manhattan. Where Liv is talking to Vivian, they're on the steps of the New York Supreme Court, the landmark building that we've seen time and time again in this show. And they hear the gunshots run out, and Liv like runs just to the left, down the steps and around the corner. Now, in addition to not having parking garages very many places, there is a parking lot that you could maybe pay for that's about a quarter mile away. It's at the end of a very long, weird block.
It's not underneath the courthouse.
It is not underneath the courthouse that was built in... When was the building built? Let's find out. Oh, it was built in 1927. Yeah, so it did not have...
People needed parking garages.
Did not have a parking structure under it. When you do something like go... Especially if you are a itinerant junkie who's living in a condemned building in the Bronx, you typically don't have your own car in New York. It's very expensive to own a car here. And you certainly don't expect to be able to park it underneath the fucking courthouse. That's definitely like makes a lot more sense for the suburban viewers.
I'm assuming that we're looking at a service entrance to the courthouse, I assume.
Well, she kind of ran down the steps and like around there's a statue there. And that's just like there's like a pathway between buildings.
Yeah, so they're cheating.
They're cheating. And then there is like a parking garage, but it's kind of a walk. It takes like 10 minutes to walk that.
It's not close enough that you would hear the gunshot, probably.
Absolutely not.
So Sarah gets shot in their garage. Mm-hmm. Jason Gamble just happens to also be there.
Ludicrous.
Yeah. Now, how the hell did the DNA come back so fast on Sarah's crime scene?
Yeah.
I mean, the way that the last 5 minutes of this episode play out, it feels like we're meant to believe that this plays out over, what, 2-3 hours?
Yeah, but it's got to be weeks. Like, you don't get a court date, like, the day of.
I'm saying just from when she posts bail to when the ex-husband is arrested. The way that the episode treats it, it's hours.
Yeah, it seems like it's a morning.
Yeah. Now, how did the DNA come back so fucking fast?
Did you look up how long it takes for DNA?
No, but I mean, obviously, you never get DNA from the lab back in an hour and a half. Because
3 to 12 weeks, typically.
Charlie's dad was sitting in the chair waiting for them. Like, the timeline of this, like, last act, really this last half of the last act, is complete nonsense. He's still sitting there on what seems like is the same day. He's, like, disheveled in a suit with a gun on the table, waiting for them to arrest him and take the gun into evidence. Yeah. But, like, the DNA on the spit cannot possibly have come back in this time.
Minimum, this is choicedna.com. It's a forensic DNA testing website. Says that the...
I assume it's a week.
Minimum is 24 hours. Typically, results...
And that's like, in a super urgent, like...
That's like the president got shot
Just think, I mean, any of us know at this point, like, how long it takes for a lab to return COVID tests. Yeah,
it takes at minimum 24 hours.
If you're doing a PCR. Yeah. If you're doing a PCR, a lab-based PCR test, it takes 24 hours for that shit.
So a typical lab, it's 24 to 72 hours if they're working on it immediately.
Sure.
Given backlogs, it can take as long as 14 days, which does not surprise me in the slightest.
But he's still wearing that suit. Has he been shitting himself in that chair for 2 weeks? Okay, so then Liv and Calvin and Elliot are playing fucking rock, paper, scissors in the precinct, and Vivian comes in and... Or not Vivian comes in, but the...
CPS guy comes in.
Yeah, CPS guy comes in.
They call him CPS, says, okay. Which is weird, which they normally don't.
But on IMDb, some hornball made the note that this is one of the rare instances when Elliot and Olivia share physical contact as he's holding her back while Calvin's being taken away. Like, wow. Someone's got some pent up shit.
Well, I love it. That's good shit, man.
So wait, you had a skill that you learned.
Well, I learned how to take screenshots from Hulu. That's the skill.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, that's all I learned. But it took me a while because I was getting really frustrated trying to transcribe it.
My hope was that you had learned how to measure dick size in the wild reliably.
Well, I'm sure most of the viewers, listeners, know this. But there's also, you got to talk about the curvature, right? So, like, you can't just, like, it's not just a point to point. Like, and what about girth? Like, there's no girth measurement.
Yep.
I feel like girth is at least as important as length on, you know.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Or at least, like, a of similar import.
I want to. As a proud chode holder.
Proud chode holder. fantastic.
Okay.
Can we rate this, Josh?
Let's rate this fucker.
Every week we rank these episodes. We rank on a rigorous four-part scale. We rank on the overall quality of the episode, the quality of the guests therein, how problematic the episode was, and the depth and breadth of lives ruined. Now, each of those gets a 1 through 10 rating, which gives us a composite score, which will allow us to rank it against all the other wild episodes of the show that we've watched. Now, this is the sixth episode of season 12 that we've watched. Now, season 12 really stands out.
Has been divisive.
Well, it has some really standout episodes. So, the best episode we've seen was a season 12-er. That was possessed.
Wet's an all-timer.
Wet is an absolute all-timer. We've also seen the Rita Wilson episode, Delinquent.
Which was terrible.
Not as great. We've seen a fantastic Jeremy Irons episode in Mask. And we've seen one that was, well, fucked up, but not very good in Totem.
Super fucked up. That is the episode that thus far has the largest disparity between the quality of the episode and the overall rating because of how fucked up the episode is.
Yep. But this one, kind of, to me, it's in the Totem vein. So we'll see when we actually rank this thing where it falls. First off, Josh, overall quality. I think we're both kind of in agreement about this one. It's not great.
No.
Like, it's really not great.
Far from it.
I'm going back and forth in my head, like, is the first 20 minutes of it fun enough to bump it to a 3? That's what I'm thinking about.
I'm definitely in the 2 or 3, like, which is it?
I think it might be a 2, because the Calvin shit is rough. And it's not Calvin's fault.
Yeah, it's really the Vivian shit.
It's not Vivian either, because she's...
It's Liv.
Yeah.
It's not Mariska necessarily, but it's the...
It's the Liv story in this.
Yeah, it's a Liv story that's not fun.
It's just, it didn't make sense in this episode.
I think we penalize it for that.
So, 2...
Two.
Yeah.
Two.
Okay. I like two there because the next one, guess.
Got to be pretty high.
All the guests in this were pretty fucking good.
Maria Bello's like legit.
She's fantastic.
She has 3 minutes where she just takes over the episode and fucking kills it.
I mean, James Martinez and Mike Starr are also both fantastic. Like you see him, yep. Like Mike Starr. So I saw him as the paramedic. I was like, huh, do I recognize that guy? And then when he comes back, it's like, oh yeah, I recognize that guy. James Martinez, also great.
Yep.
I thought all the ad dickheads were kind of fun. I enjoyed that storyline, and I thought they were...
I think Maria Bello's
great.
Really, really great. I think the guests is an 8.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
It's still, like, not a great episode, but, like, the guests is sort of where the episode shines.
Yeah, and maybe the next one. Because was this episode problematic?
I don't know. Was it, Adam?
I mean, Clark Tinta, his perversion...
Does anything coming out of his mouth not play as immediately problematic?
But it's just, like, it's, like, so specific and so fucked up. Obviously, oh, yeah. There's a lot of things that are wrong, yeah. But it exists in this kind of like state where like you get the feeling that like Jeffrey Dahmer wouldn't want to tell somebody about what he was doing unless he was about to kill them and eat them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Clark Tinta has no problem telling his buddy loudly over a cup of coffee in a busy coffee shop that he like rapes people in the back of his ambulance while they're being transported for surgery. It's fucked up.
Yep.
Also, like that party... Fucked up party, man. Yep. Didn't care for it. Fucked up that you do that to your friend. Love the lay list, which I think factors into this category. Is this a 6? Or does it bump higher because of Tinta's perversions?
I think it bumps to a 7.
Okay. Because the reason I wasn't instantly giving it a higher score than that is just because, again, so much of the episode.
Because that's the first
10 minutes of the episode is that. All right. So depth and breadth. Let's see. Calvin's going to Vermont. But as we know,
husband's grandparents aren't that bad.
Yeah, all we know about Calvin is that his grandparents are totally fine and that he's living a perfectly normal life. That's all we know about Calvin. Presumably, Vivian is getting real treatment this time. Her lover, girlfriend, partner, whatever, drug user friend, Sarah. I guess they're like lovers, right?
Oh, yeah. They're getting their junkie fuck on.
Okay. Well, her partner, we'll call her a partner, in love and in crime, she's dead. Clark Tint is dead, but that's good. That's very good.
Yeah.
O'Doul, he's probably getting fired. I doubt he's going to actually do time.
He'll do time.
You think he's going to do time?
Well, I mean, I guess maybe for turning on... Well, but Tinta, there wasn't a conviction off of it, so I don't know that a...
Yeah, it's good. Good point.
Case was closed, so
it comes down to the discretion.
He might get off
with
a slap on the wrist, but he's done with the FDNY.
Yeah, he's done
and should be.
Hopefully, he has enough service time that he can put in his pension. But I mean, really abusing his power there.
Wait, how?
So, lots of people have been robbed by the FDNY. Lots of people have been violated on their way to...
our trust in the FDNY has been eroded through the course of this episode.
But it's totally a hit piece on the FDNY, right? Like,
I know.
Basically, like, whatever cop consultant on the writing team for this was like, fuck those firefighters getting all the 9/11 love, you know? Like,
still jealous. Yeah. I mean, I guess that if we were maybe, like, giving too much credit for problematic, that's a factor in problematic in its favor to keep it at the point where we had it. So
yeah, what else we got? We got two dead girls.
Sure.
Two dead girls are Faith in the fire department, and that's about it, right? So what does that put us? Maybe another 7, or is it like a 6?
I mean, I guess there's a serial rapist,
but he's dead by the end of the episode. So
no, but his victims.
Yeah, at least one of them is
presumably
dead.
Not just 3.
Yeah,
I think it's a 6.
Okay. I like that.
It might fall short of 6 generally, but I guess there's the Liv angle also. Liv and Calvin.
And Calvin gets ripped out of her arms. And he's sad about it, even though we know that he goes to a better place.
Yeah, whatever.
But we have the benefit of...
He goes to New England.
We have the benefit of, like, watching this as if it were, like, an Alain Rogrier novel, you know, where everything...
Why is everyone trying to take kids and Liv's charge off to New England?
It's good.
What's up with
good
that?
Good question. Yeah, why... Why the, like, more obscure New England states? Like, nobody takes them to Maine, do they? Not yet, at least. I think that means it's time to roll the next one, right?
Did we say what the overall score was?
Oh, we didn't. It's a 5.75, Josh.
Okay.
It has such standout highlights that I think it does kind of get it just above average. Of course, the lows are so bad that you probably will have turned off the episode before you've, like, suffered through the whole thing. The last 575 that I can find is the first Brad Garrett episode. That was Intersecting Lives. His refractory period is in an inverse proportion to his height. So it comes in as the rare middle-of-the-road season 12 episode, but as we know, because of the weird way that we rank these things, it absolutely is not middle-of-the-road. This was a terrible episode that just, like, ticks the boxes that we like to tick.
That just hits the shit that we
that we rank on.
Yeah.
But yeah, so enjoy the first 20 minutes of this one and then turn it off. That's my advice.
Unless you really care about
Maria Bello's performances.
I mean, Maria Bello's
It's worth watching. Yeah, especially that first scene where they're in the, crack in the house.
But if you can work up the desire to turn it off, then just do it.
Yeah.
So, heading over to episode.lol, which was built for this podcast by friend of the pod, Flett. The tape is spinning. Bill and Ted are decidedly displeased with their lot in life.
They are.
And we've got season 5, episode 16, Home.
It's been a minute since we had a season 5 episode.
Now, Lowdown.
Yeah, oh, that's right. That's right.
It's 8 episodes. Yeah. So, if I'm reading the overview, a mentally ill woman's paranoia intensifies after her innocent bystander husband is murdered during a robbery, fueling her descent into child abuse, abandonment, and death. Seems like they're giving a lot away in that description. Okay, so we've got Diane Venora, who is an actress that people would recognize. It's got Marlo Thomas. Joseph Cross is also another recognizable person. Beth Ehlers, who's another recognizable actress. Oh, Dixie Carter is in this episode, a designing woman.
Yeah.
You know, it's got some recognizable actors. Abby Bassey's back, who was Denny Gams' mom.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Love Denny Gams.
a kid who just couldn't stop soda and killed himself.
Oh, I love that photo of that poor kid. Oh, his cheeks. I just want to pinch his cheeks. I got to say, the plot synopsis doesn't exactly engender warm fuzzies in me going into this. But
so, we have some new patrons to thank.
Yeah.
Karen D., Madeline K., and Sarah L., thanks for joining our ranks.
Thanks a lot, guys. Really.
Your support is so appreciated.
It's huge.
Yeah, it's big. We should have... The last Movie Club entry that we dropped would have been for the Vincent Spano Star Vehicle, Alphabet City. But yeah, patrons all get exclusive access to the one Movie Club entry a month, and then we also release the unedited versions of these episodes, and for you listeners who are still with us, we're at the 2:17 mark, and presumably this episode will be
severely cut.
Yeah, a lot of stuff will not be in the normal episode, so you're probably looking at a solid half hour to 45 minutes, if not hour almost, that will only be available for the patrons, and they'll get video and audio access to that a week early. Yeah. So, yeah, we obviously have a Patreon. That is just patreon.com/muchmybenson. We have merch up at Zazzle. The links are in the show notes. Oh, we're on all the socials.
The ones
we would be on. Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter @muchmybenson. We have a subreddit, r/muchmybenson. You can email the show at muchmybenson@gmail.com. And... Oh, munchmybenson.com.
Yeah.
Head there. Has all the info you need.
Sure. I think it's time to get out there and start munching. I am exhausted.
You know, munch everyone's Benson, but make sure to get consent first.
Yeah, and definitely, man, like, if your munch partner is doing some really bad shit, you don't have to cover for him, man.
You don't have to cover for him.
See you guys.
We'll be right back. Doc, is our victim awake yet?
I hope not. She's in the morgue.